Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The votes have been counted tonight. Tune in to SDPB TV to find out what book lovers have chosen for America's best loved novel. The Great American Read finale airs tonight at 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain. In honor of the conclusion of a summer of reading and voting, we've decided to let you know which books a few of us voted for. Here are some highlights from the SDPB family.
When I stepped out into the bright sunlight from the darkness of the movie house, I had only two things on my mind: Paul Newman and a ride home. I was wishing I looked like Paul Newman. He looks tough, and I don't. But I guess my own looks aren't so bad. I have light brown, almost red hair, and greenish-gray eyes. I wish there were more gray because I hate most guys that have green eyes, but I have to be content with what I have. My hair is longer than a lot of boys wear theirs, squared off in the back and long at the front and sides, but I'm a greaser, and most of my neighborhood rarely bothers to get a haircut. Besides, I look better with long hair. I had a long walk home and no company, but I usually loan it anyway, for no reason except that I like to watch movies undisturbed so I can get into them and live them with the actors. When I see a movie with someone, it's kind of uncomfortable, like having someone read your book over your shoulder. I'm different that way. I'm Steve Zwemke. My vote is for The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. Stay gold.
Once there were four children, whose names were Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. This story is about something that happened to them when they were sent away from London during the war because of the air raids. They were sent to the house of an old professor who lived in the heart of the country, 10 miles from the nearest railway station and 2 miles from the nearest post office. He had no wife, and he lived in a very large house with a housekeeper called Mrs. MacCready and 3 servants. Their names were Ivy, Margaret, and Betty, but they do not come into the story much. He himself was a very old man with shaggy white hair which grew over most of his face as well as on his head, and they liked him almost at once. But on the first evening when he came out to meet them at the front door, he was so odd-looking that Lucy, who was the youngest, was a little afraid of him, and Edmund, who was the next youngest, wanted to laugh and had to keep on pretending he was blowing his nose to hide it. I'm Chris Loffrey, and that was an excerpt from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
First the colors, then the humans. That's usually how I see things, or at least how I try. Here is a small fact. You are going to die. I am, in all truthfulness, attempting to be cheerful about this whole topic, though most people find themselves hindered in believing me, no matter my protestations. Please, trust me. I most definitely can be cheerful. I can be amiable, agreeable, affable, and that's only the A's. Just don't ask me to be nice. Nice has nothing to do with me. I'm Lori Walsh, and I voted for The Book Thief.
If you really want to hear about it, the first thing you'll probably want to know is where I was born, and what my lousy childhood was like, and how my parents were occupied and all before they had me, and all of that David Copperfield kind of crap. But I don't feel like going into it, if you want to know the truth. In the first place, that stuff bores me. In the second place, my parents would have 2 hemorrhages apiece if I told anything pretty personal about them. They're quite touchy about anything like that, especially my father. They're nice and all, I'm not saying that, but they're also touchy as hell. Besides, I'm not going to tell you my whole autobiography or anything. I'm just going to tell you about this madman stuff that happened to me last Christmas, just before I got pretty run down and had to come out and take it easy. I mean, that's all I told DB about, and he's my brother and all. He's in Hollywood. That isn't too far from this crummy place, and he comes over and visits me practically every weekend. I'm Bob Bussey, and I voted for Catcher in the Rye.
In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since. Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, he told me, just remember that all the people in this world haven't had the advantages that you've had. He didn't say any more, but we've always been unusually communicative in a reserved way. I understand that he meant a great deal more than that. In consequence, I'm inclined to reserve all judgments, a habit that has opened up many curious natures to me and also made me the victim of not a few veteran bores. I'm Brian Gevick, and I voted for The Great Gatsby.
There was a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and the Hatter were having tea at it. A dormouse was sitting between them, fast asleep, and the other two were using it as a cushion, resting their elbows on it and talking over its head. Very uncomfortable for the dormouse, thought Alice. Only as it's asleep, I suppose it doesn't mind. The table was a large one, but the three were all crowded together at one corner of it. No room, no room, they cried out when they saw Alice coming. There's plenty of room, said Alice indignantly, and she sat down in a large armchair at one end of the table. Have some wine, the March Hare said in an encouraging tone. Alice looked all round the table, but there was nothing on it but tea. I don't see any wine, she remarked. There isn't any, said the March Hare. Then it wasn't very civil of you to offer it, said Alice angrily. It wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited, said the March Hare.
Yes. So go ahead and...
I didn't know it was your table, said Alice. It's laid for a great many more than three.
Well, I didn't really have anything to eat for breakfast this morning.
He'd been looking at Alice for some time with great curiosity, and this was his first speech.
All right, sounds good.
You should learn not to make personal remarks, Alice said with some severity. It's very rude. The Hatter opened his eyes very wide at hearing this, but all he said was, why is a raven like a writing desk? I'm Gary Ellenbold, and I have voted for Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland.
Cuando el señor Bilbo Bolsón, de Bolsón Cerrado, anunció que muy pronto celebraría su cumpleaños 111º, con una fiesta de especial magnificencia, hubo muchos comentarios y excitación en Hobbiton. Bilbo era muy rico y muy peculiar, y había sido el asombro de la comarca durante 60 años, desde su memorable desaparición e inesperado regreso.
This is Adrian Botella, and I voted for The Lord of the Rings.
I'm Nate Weck, and for the great American read, I voted for Harry Potter. Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of Number 4 Privet Drive were proud to say that they were perfectly normal. Thank you very much. They were the last people you'd expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious, because they just didn't hold with such nonsense. Mr. Dursley was the director of a firm called Grunnings, which made drills. He was a big, beefy man with hardly any neck, although he did have a very large mustache. Mrs. Dursley was thin and blonde and had nearly twice the usual amount of neck, which came in very useful as she spent so much of her time craning over garden fences, spying on the neighbors. The Dursleys had a small son called Dudley, and their opinion there was no finer boy anywhere. The Dursleys had everything they wanted, but they also had a secret, and their greatest fear was that somebody would discover it. They didn't think they could bear it if anyone found out about the Potters. Mrs. Potter was Mrs. Dursley's sister, but they hadn't met for several years. In fact, Mrs. Dursley pretended she didn't have a sister, because her sister and her good-for-nothing husband were as un-Dursley-ish as it was possible to be. The Dursleys shuddered to think what the neighbors would say if the Potters arrived in the street. The Dursleys knew that the Potters had a small son, too, but they had never even seen him.
Everyone now knows how to find the meaning of life within himself. But mankind wasn't always so lucky. Less than a century ago, men and women did not have easy access to the puzzle boxes within them. They could not name even one of the 53 portals to the soul. Gimcrack religions were big business. Mankind, ignorant of the truths that lie within every human being, looked outward, pushed ever outward. What mankind hoped to learn in its outward push was who was actually in charge of all creation and what all creation was all about. Mankind flung its advance agents ever outward, ever outward. Eventually, it flung them out into space, into the colorless, tasteless, weightless sea of outwardness without end. It flung them like stones. These unhappy agents found what had already been found in abundance on Earth— a nightmare of meaninglessness without end. The bounties of space, of infinite outwardness, were three: empty heroics, low comedy, and pointless death. Outwardness lost, at last, its imagined attractions. Only inwardness remained to be explored. Only the human soul remained terra incognita. This was the beginning of goodness and wisdom. I'm Carl Gerke, and that's from Kurt Vonnegut's book, The Sirens of Titan.
A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. I am doomed to remember a boy with a wrecked voice, not because of his voice or because he was the smallest person I ever knew, or even because he was the instrument of my mother's death, but because he is the reason I believe in God.
Turn with me, if you will, to page 118, where I will read from chapter 12 of Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. Here we join the main character, Jake Barnes, and his friend Bill Gordon as they're on their way to Pamplona for the running of the bulls. But first, they decide to take a brief detour and do some trout fishing. The road came out from the shadow of the woods into the hot sun. Ahead was a river valley. Beyond the river was a steep hill. There were fields of buckwheat on the hill. We saw a white house under some trees on the hillside. It was very hot, and we stopped under some trees beside a dam that crossed the river. Bill put the pack against one of the trees, and we jointed up the rods, put on the reels, tied on leaders, and got ready to fish. "You're sure this thing has trout in it?" Bill asked. "It's full of them." "I'm going to fish a fly. You got any McGinties?" "There are some in there." "You going to fish bait?" "Yeah, I'm going to fish the dam here." "Well, I'll take the fly book then." He tied on a fly. "Where'd I better go, up or down?" "Down is the best. There are plenty up above, too." Bill went down the bank. "Take a worm can." "No, I don't want one. If they won't take a fly, I'll just flick it around." Bill was down below, watching the stream. "Say," he called up against the noise of the dam, "how about putting the wine in that spring up the road?" "All right," I shouted. Bill waved his hand and started down the stream. I found the two wine bottles in the pack and carried them up the road to where the water of a spring flowed out of an iron pipe. There was a board over the spring, and I lifted it, knocking the corks firmly into the bottles, lowered them down into the water. It was so cold my hand and wrist felt numbed. I put back the slab of wood and hoped nobody would find the wine.
The week before I left my family and Florida and the rest of my minor life to go to boarding school in Alabama, my mother insisted on throwing me a going-away party. To say that I had low expectations would be to underestimate the matter dramatically. Although I was more or less forced to invite all my school friends, i.e. the ragtag bunch of drama people and English geeks I sat with by social necessity in the cavernous cafeteria of my public school, I knew they wouldn't come. Still, my mother persevered, awash in the delusion that I had kept my popularity secret from her all these years. She cooked a small mountain of artichoke dip. She festooned our living room in green and yellow streamers, the colors of my new school. She bought 2 dozen champagne poppers and placed them around the edge of our coffee table. And when that final Friday came, when my packing was mostly done, she sat with my dad and me on the living room couch at 4:56 p.m. and patiently awaited the arrival of the Goodbye to Miles cavalry. Said cavalry consisted of exactly 2 people. Marie Lawson, a tiny blonde with rectangular glasses, and her chunky, to put it charitably, boyfriend, Will. I'm Jackie Hendry, and I voted for Looking for Alaska by John Green.
To the red country and part of the gray country of Oklahoma, the last rains came gently, and they did not cut the scarred earth. The plows crossed and recrossed the rivulet marks. The last rains lifted the corn quickly and scattered weed colonies and grass along the sides of the roads so that the gray country and the dark red country began to disappear under a green cover. In the last part of May, the sky grew pale and the clouds that had hung in high puffs for so long in the spring were dissipated. The sun flared down on the growing corn day after day until a line of brown spread along the edge of each green bayonet. The clouds appeared and went away, and in a while they did not try anymore. I'm Jeremy Ludeman, and I voted for The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck.
Princeton in the summer smelled of nothing, and although Ifemelu liked the tranquil greenness of the many trees, the clean streets and stately homes, the delicately overpriced shops, and the quiet, abiding air of earned grace, it was this, the lack of a smell, that most appealed to her. I'm Katie Beam, and I voted for Americana by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Once, when I was 6 years old, I saw a magnificent picture in a book called True Stories from Nature about the Primeval Forest. It was a picture of a boa constrictor in the act of swallowing an animal. Here is a copy of the drawing. In the book, it said, "Boa constrictors swallow their prey whole without chewing it. After that, they are not able to move, and they sleep through the 6 months that they need for digestion." I pondered deeply, then, over the adventures of the jungle, and after some work with a colored pencil, I succeeded in making my first drawing. My drawing number one. It looked like this. I showed my masterpiece to the grown-ups and asked them whether the drawing frightened them. But they answered, "Frighten? Why should anyone be frightened by a hat?" My drawing was not a picture of a hat. It was a picture of a boa constrictor digesting an elephant. But since the grown-ups were not able to understand it, I made another drawing. I drew the inside of the boa constrictor so that the grown-ups could see it clearly. They always need to have things explained. My drawing number two looked like this. The grown-ups' response this time was to advise me to lay aside my drawings of boa constrictors, whether from the inside or the outside, and devote myself instead to geography, history, arithmetic, and grammar. That is why, at the age of 6, I gave up what might have been a magnificent career as a painter. I had been disheartened by the failure of my drawing number one and my drawing number two. Grown-ups never understand anything by themselves, and it is tiresome for children to be always and forever explaining things to them. This is Susie Hansen.
This is Georgie Hansen.
And we voted for The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry in The Great American Read.